Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast. I'm Vanessa Walker, the managing editor of Money. We are living through difficult times, with the war in Iran spreading through the Middle East. And unless you've been living under a rock, you'll know that one of the knock-on effects of war in this region is a shortage of oil reaching Australia. Now, quick lesson. Crude oil, which is a naturally occurring fossil fuel, contains a mixture of hydrocarbons that are processed in a refinery to produce petrol and diesel. We don't produce much crude oil in Australia, and we have only two oil refineries. We are largely dependent on overseas supply, so we are thus in a petrol-diesel pickle. Now, over the past few weeks, ICE car owners, ICE being an internal combustion engine, have contended with petrol and diesel price spikes and supply anxiety. This is intersecting with a flood of EVs from Asia, an increase in EV infrastructure, including home charging, and the knowledge that EV owners, who typically save around $1,200 to $2,000 on fuel alone per year, are just not rattled about fuel supply. All this begs the question, is it time to switch to an EV? To help us explore this question, we're talking to Money's motoring contributor, Matt Campbell. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
So can you summarise the concerns that were discouraging Australians from embracing EVs until recently?
I think there were several different things that were discouraging Australians from EVs. There's price being one of the key considerations. These new electric vehicles that we're seeing hitting the market now have been pushing the price down and opening the barrier to entry, I guess, for a lot of different customers that wouldn't have otherwise considered an EV. EV driving range is another big consideration. How far your battery will allow you to drive fully electrically is still a concern for many people. Some people tend to think that they need enough distance to travel from Sydney to Melbourne without having to stop and recharge. The reality is you don't in most situations. There's also resale questions that people have had over the value of an EV after a few years of ownership, and also the reliability of the battery pack as part of that consideration. And also fit for purpose cars. They've been a lot of more expensive, larger electric vehicles, but recently we've seen a gamut of smaller, more affordable, more attainable options for different customers that has really opened things up in terms of what's available.
So we looked at Compare the Market data, and it found that more than half of Australians are now considering an EV or a hybrid as their next potential vehicle. Aside from the price of petrol, and you've touched on a couple of these, what has changed? Why has the landscape changed? Why are people open to it suddenly?
So it's partly legislative. So there's a new vehicle emissions scheme that has basically forced the hand of a number of different car manufacturers to bring in EVs or electrified vehicles, whether they be regular hybrids, plug-in hybrids, range extenders. They're all different types of the same thing. They use electric power as part of propulsion or for the full level of propulsion. And the tech has changed significantly. Previously, there was just hybrids and EVs. Some brands had plug-in hybrids, which people didn't really understand the benefits of, because in their infancy, there were no specific benefits. You would get 40 to 50 kilometers of EV driving range, whereas now for plug-in hybrids, you can see that range extend up to 200 kilometers almost. So essentially, you've got a medium range EV drive experience, but then a petrol engine that can back you up after the fact when the battery runs out, if you need to do a longer trip. And that has really allowed people to think about an EV or a part-time EV, as I like to call them. It does make a lot of sense in that instance. Then the general electric vehicle question about range, as I said earlier, we're seeing cars now with 600 kilometers plus of EV driving range as a pretty regular occurrence. And that's just going to increase over the next few years. I would say we'll see cars with 1,000 kilometers of range coming soon. And that's due to battery chemistry changes, charging changes. And there's lots of different things that have changed in the tech side of things. But also the landscape for buying an EV is changing as well, because you're seeing a level of price parity between internal combustion engine cars or hybrid cars and EVs. And that's really making people think, well, should I be buying a petrol car that I still have to spend heaps of money to keep running, as opposed to an EV, which might, in theory, for some people, be very, very cost effective to run? There's so many other things to it as well. But there are still barriers. Infrastructure and the public charging network is something that is not changing fast enough, I would say. In other parts of the world, we've seen rapid fire change in the public charging area of existence for EV drivers. Still, you know, a couple of weeks ago for the Easter long weekend, we saw queues of 5 hours for some Tesla chargers for people that were out on road trips trying to recharge their EV on longer trips. And this is the biggest barrier to entry for most people, I think, even though in the majority of instances, it isn't actually a barrier of entry. It is just something that is a psychological barrier for Australian customers in particular.
Why is the infrastructure lagging behind the take-up of EVs?
In places like China, for instance, where electrification, it's the only way forward, we've seen a rapid widening of infrastructure to basically meet the market in terms of what is expected, being able to drive, you know, 3 or 4 hours and having a charge port every 20 kilometers or so where you could rapid charge. It is another world compared to what we have. And I think that part of it is that early on, there was incentives for customers to buy EVs. There are still some incentives here and there, obviously, but there were cash incentives, essentially. You get $6,000 off your EV, but that money never really made sense to me. It was the idea of giving people who can afford a new car a discount to buy that new car, as opposed to spending that money and investing in infrastructure to support that network of cars, seems like the wrong move from the government, in my opinion, because what we've seen in other places is bigger investment in infrastructure for the public to be able to recharge, as opposed to leaving it to private entities to offer that support for customers to be able to go and recharge somewhere. So the petrol companies are slowly building their range of EV charging locations across Australia. We're still seeing a rollout of public charging infrastructure as well, but Tesla is another one that has really opened its network up to other users. So you don't just have to own a Tesla to charge at a Tesla station. And that is really opening up what is available to different drivers out there.
All right, that's good to know. So when it comes to charging your EV, what's the most economical setup to have on charging cost? I presume it's solar, home batteries, plug-in.
Take 100%. So there are, if you don't have solar and you don't have a home battery, there are still some electric vehicle friendly plans that you can get on. So you get a much more reduced off-peak rate at nighttime. So the idea being that just like your phone, you plug it in at night, when you get up in the morning, it's ready to go. So that's the same sort of mindset with these EV plans that you can get through specific providers. But the ultimate is to have a home with solar on the roof, a battery that can store any energy that it generates through the day, and then you can use that energy to charge your car overnight. That is essentially free motoring if you can get it right. And there are so many apps and different approaches to doing this, but it is really a foolproof way. If you can do it and you're into the idea of buying an EV and running an EV life, then it's certainly the best way to do it.
Now, what about EV affordability? You mentioned that before. Are we, you said that entry-level EVs are now much more affordable for people. What kind of price range are we looking at?
So anything from $23,990 plus on-road costs. So let's say about $27,500. But there are some caveats to this. So the idea that you will buy the cheapest EV on the market, which is the BYD Atto 1, it's the most affordable one at $24,000 plus on-road costs, it has very limited EV driving range. It's got a small battery. It is a city car through and through. So if you're okay with let's say, about 200 Ks of range, then it would be perfectly suitable. And that, for a lot of people that live urban, say you live 7 or 8 kilometers from your office, you could still do a week of commuting and only charge it on the weekend. And, you know, that right. could make a lot of sense for people. But we are seeing in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, much more EV driving range offered to people. I recently did a video on my YouTube channel, which was looking at the costs per kilometer of EV driving range. And there are some cars out there that offer you a really, really good amount of range for not much money. One of them that comes to mind is it's called the GAC Ion UT. It's a bit of a strange name, but it's a little electric hatchback. It's got 430 kilometers of claimed EV driving range, and it's about $32,000 drive away. So it is answering the question that people have been asking, looking for a car that offers decent driving range, but also doesn't cost them $80,000 to get it.
It's like the equivalent of a Barina.
Exactly. And I could see it as sort of as an alternative, a fully electric alternative to a Corolla. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's priced as well. It starts at a lower price point than a hybrid Corolla. And for a lot of people, that could make a lot of sense. But we're also going to see in the next, I would say, 6 months, a couple more very affordable, smaller electric vehicles coming from China. And China is where these vehicles are coming from. And they will probably push under the $30,000 drive-away barrier for, I would say, 350 kilometers of range. So pretty impressive.
Okay, good little urban car. So let's just plug your website and YouTube channel. It's called The Right Car. Is that right?
That's right. And I do reviews of every type of car, from a little electric car to a big petrol V8. So if you have different tastes to this conversation, there's still going to be some content there for you.
Awesome. What are the things worth having in an EV compared to the gimmicks? What should people be, you know, checking out, getting the good data on, as opposed to the flashy things that they don't need?
Okay, so there's one thing that I think is either you're totally into it or it won't matter to you, and that is connected services. So that's where you might be able to use your smartphone to control some things about the car from your phone. So you could preset your air conditioning temperature, you could set your charge timers, that sort of thing. A lot of that you can do on the screen in the car anyway, but just having that at a glance on your phone, if you're at a public charger, just being able to see that on your phone can be the difference between having to get up and walk back to the car and see where the charge status is, as opposed to just looking at your phone and going, oh, it's at 80%, I'll go back now. So there's that, I think, is one of those things that could go either way. If you don't necessarily need to public charge all the time and you know that you're going to be parking in a garage every night, hey, you might not need that. And there's some really great cars that many people have ruled out because it doesn't have that technology, but it's still a fantastic car. The Skoda Enyaq comes to mind, the Volkswagen ID4 and ID5, and even the ID Buzz. They are all great cars, but they don't have connected services. And for, you know, I don't want to be disparaging here, but the tech geeks who are buying EVs, if it doesn't have the tech, it might not necessarily appease what they want in terms of the car experience.
Now, aside from purchase price, what kind of on-road costs do EV owners incur?
Well, there's a few that you might not think about until you're, you know, signing on the dotted line. One of them is the insurance costs. So compared to some petrol or diesel cars, EVs can be quite expensive to insure. Part of that comes down to the fact that a lot of them are from newer brands that may not have a network set up with the parts that you might need if you are in an accident. So there might be a higher chance that they just have to write the car off. So you might have to pay a higher premium as a result of that. Another side of it is fire risk, or the perception of fire risk, because there's still this idea in the public that, and obviously in the ideas of the insurance policymakers as well, that EVs are more likely to catch fire and, you know, cause damage to everything around them.
This is lithium batteries, right?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are some instances where we have seen EV fires. There's no doubt about that. But we also never see as much reporting on cars with petrol engines and diesel engines that catch fire. And it does happen more often in those cars because there's more of them. So it is a flashpoint, I would say, at this point in time. Still, people are worried about fire. I wouldn't be worried about it. The other cost that you need to consider is resale value. So if you are buying a car from a new brand, you might find that after 5 years, it won't be worth as much as a car from a known brand. But then again, with EVs at the moment, more generally, up until recently, they've had a steeper cliff to fall off when it comes to the resale values. But in recent times, with this pressure from the fuel crisis, resale values for a lot of EVs have actually spiked back up. So, you know, you might have looked at a 3-year-old electric car that was $20,000 a few weeks ago. Now it's $30,000 because the demand is there. So those are things that I would say you should be mindful of. But, you know, resale is like looking into a crystal ball.
Yes.
It could be anything.
Yeah, good to know. Can you just quickly run us through a few makes and models you think our listeners should check out for small, medium, and large EVs?
Sure. There's quite a few, and it really will depend on your budget. For a budget small car, that BYD Atto 1 that I said before, there are two battery versions of it. So the longer range one seems to make a bit more sense, and it's still around $30,000, $32,000 drive away. Another little one that I really liked was the MG4 EV Urban. So it's a compact hatchback with a really nice drive experience to it and decent EV range. And for a more premium compact car, the Skoda Elroq. And it is basically a slightly shrunken version of one of their larger SUVs, but it's around $45,000 and is a premium experience. Up from there, there's one that in the medium SUV segment that I think is a real standout. It's the Zeekr 7X. It has won lots of awards from lots of my colleagues in the industry because it's a fantastic car to drive, very easy to live with, and it has some long-range options available and a fast one if you want a fast one as well. But if you aren't necessarily needing that much performance and panache, then you could look at something a bit more affordable and maybe a little bit more compact in the GAC Ion V, which is a compact SUV, but still very practical. And one of the coolest things about it is it has a fridge in it. So it's got this little drawer where it can either be used to heat things up or cool things down. So if you've got pies or toasted sandwiches or something and you want to wait to where you're going, then there's that, or ice creams. So it's a good, really good family-friendly thing. Yeah. And when it comes to larger EVs, as I said earlier, I think the larger you go, the bigger the price gets. So that is worth considering. You can buy Kia EV9, which is a 7-seater large SUV. It's about $90,000 before on-road costs. And there's a faster one of it as well now. But there are a few options out there in the larger segment. But I would say that we haven't really seen yet the competition hit the 7-seater space for EVs. And I think that's probably one of the next things we'll see in that $75,000 to $100,000 bracket. We'll see a lot more in that area of the market.
All right, good to know. Now, you get invited to all the car shows. Mm-hmm. What is next for EVs?
It's a good question. I think the next battle for most of the manufacturers is charging speed. So that is battery technology, but also the technology that allows you to charge as fast as possible. For instance, BYD is talking about offering a ultra charger, I think they're calling it, or lightning charger, and it should be able to do something like 300-500 kilometers of range in as little as 9 minutes. So we're talking massive speed to be able to recharge a car that's capable of charging that fast. And that is one of the other things to read the fine print. Make sure when you are considering an EV that you look at how fast it can charge and ask questions. If you're not sure about it, don't be afraid to ask, because charging speed could be the difference between your trip away taking 5 hours and your trip away taking 8 or 9 hours. So that's the difference between some of the value that you get if you spend a little more, because you might get better charging rates. And that's where we're going with the battle for EV supremacy, I think, is faster charging and better battery technology with more range. It's not necessarily going to be performance. It's not necessarily going to be inclusions in the interior or technology, because so many of them do a lot for less money than the existing brands and businesses that have been offering cars for 100 years. So it's really a battle in China that is making its way here, and the consumer's going to benefit, I think.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us, Matt.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
That's great. That was Matt Campbell. He's Money's contributing motoring editor, and he runs a channel called The Right Car. Check it out.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.